You're listening to the Missional Marketing Podcast, a show for church leaders, church communications professionals, and ministry volunteers. Our goal is to help your church grow by leveraging digital marketing and effective communications.
Maybe the biggest takeaway that I'd like to get across to people is that GEO and SEO aren't so fundamentally different. It's not like you're doing two completely separate activities. There are nuances and there are things that are more specific to one than the other. But if your overall fundamental SEO is very strong, at minimum, your GEO is going to be decent.
Welcome to another episode of the Missional Marketing Podcast. My name is Bart Blair. I'm the co-host of the show. I sit alongside the CEO of Missional Marketing, Mr. Jason Hamrock. And we have been producing this podcast for over 5 years with a goal of helping churches grow by leveraging digital marketing and effective communications. This is, I believe, if I've done the math correctly, the 173rd episode of our show. And if you happen to be new to the podcast, make sure that you subscribe so that you don't miss future episodes. And maybe you should just go back and check out the archives, whether that's on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or on YouTube, wherever you happen to be consuming this content. We have done a lot of interviews over the course of the last 5 years. We have done deep dives into all things church marketing, communications, AI, you name it. And hopefully you'll find some stuff in the archives that is helpful for you. Today, sharing an interview with you that we recently did with our colleague, Jason Collier. It has been a little confusing over the years to have two Jasons on our team. Jason Hamrock, our CEO, Jason Collier, our senior developer. Make no mistake, they are very different men and think very differently. Jason Collier is our senior developer, and he is brilliant when it comes to all things technical, SEO, programming, full stack development, all that stuff that I don't really understand at all. But he also has a gift of being able to explain things from that technical side of things in a way that help pastors like me and hopefully pastors and communications directors like you understand these things. Today, our conversation is about SEO, but not like we usually talk about SEO. In fact, we're talking about the reported death of SEO. I don't know if you ever see these articles online, but I've been reading articles all over the place that say that AI is rendering SEO, search engine optimization, dead. And I wanted to pick Jason Collier's brain on whether or not this is actually true. And what we learned is, no, it's not true. It's just a rumor. SEO is not dying. SEO is not going anywhere. Although there are probably some shifts in our SEO that we need to consider and the way that we optimize our websites so that we are both found by Google and Bing and DuckDuckGo and whatever search engines people are using, but also that we're able to be found and reported back by ChatGPT and Claude and Perplexity and Grok and Gemini and all the other large language models that people are using to do searches online these days. Anyway, I think it's a very fascinating conversation. I hope that there are some practical tips that you can take away, maybe some things that you can apply to your own church's website. If you'd like to do a deeper dive with Jason Hamrock and me about your website SEO and talk about this GEO concept, we'd love to have a call with you. You can reach out and we'd be happy to set up a free consultation just to chat about your church and where you are and what improvements you might want to make on your church website. And I should also mention that in September of this year, we are hosting a conference in Chicago, September 19th to 21. And that is the Church Communications Conference. We held one last fall in Dallas. It was a huge hit. We're doing it in Chicago this year. So at the time that you're listening to this podcast, there's still plenty of time for you to register, still plenty of time for you to make travel plans. And we hope that you will. I will link in the show notes to the conference and my discount code. I have a discount code that I can give you to get you a great deal on the conference. At the conference, we'll be talking about all things church communications, marketing, and artificial intelligence. And we have a guest speaker. There are going to be a few keynote speakers, but one of them is Mark McDonald, who is leads an organization called Be Known for Something. I'm not sure if you've listened to some of our past episodes. Mark's been on the show a couple of times, great friend of ours, and really excited to have him as one of our keynote speakers at the conference. That's enough for me. This has been a long introduction to what's going to be a very insightful podcast episode for you. So without any further delay, here's Jason Hamrock and me and our recent interview with Jason Collier. Jason Collier, thank you so much for joining Mr. Hamrock and me on the podcast today.
Yeah, I'm back again. So it must have been a slow period of guests if you're having me back on.
That's what you said before we started recording. It is not true. You are a wealth of knowledge and information.
It feels true.
It feels true. It's not true. I would record this with you every single week.
Yeah.
We've called this, you know, Bart and the Two Jasons or something like that. But the problem is you have too many things going on to be a regular guest on the podcast. So we just bring you on from time to time to talk about things that you'll be able to bring a level of expertise that maybe Mr. Hamrock and I can't. And yes. We really appreciate you making the time to be with us today. Before we get into our topic of discussion today, Jason, can you just kind of give our audience a little bit of an overview of what your skill set is and what your role is on the Missional Marketing team?
Sure, yeah. So I do a lot of techie things at Missional Marketing. A fair amount of web development, building church websites, handling some of the more complex sort of integrations in that realm of things. I build some proprietary tools. We have some systems at Missional Marketing that we're pretty proud of that do different things for churches that I've constructed. I developed SermonSpark for anybody who's used that app for some sermon prep powered by AI and a whole bunch of other stuff that I'm sure I'm forgetting. So spread around nicely, got my spoon in many soup bowls here.
That is true. It's a pretty good way of putting it. Now, the reason that we invited you to be on the show today is the last time you were on, we talked specifically about search engine optimization, SEO. And we did, I would call it a deep dive, but it was really, I think I titled the episode SEO 101 for Churches because we really just hit some of the nuts and bolts about things that churches need to know, some of the primary X's and O's that churches need to know about SEO. As Jason Hamrock and I have been meeting with churches, doing roadshows with the church communications group, there's been a lot of conversation, a lot of questions about SEO and how SEO fits into AI searches. And so we wanted to just kind of pick your brain today on some of the things that you're learning, some of the things that you're observing as it relates to SEO, GEO, as some may call it, LLM, SEO. We can even explain some of these acronyms as we get going. But I'm going to flip things over here to Mr. Hamrock and let him just kind of lead off in our questioning of you today, the interview.
Well, you know, because we get to work a lot of churches and that's been a big conversation is, hey, how do we optimize our website so that we might be found in some kind of an AI search result? As you know, like you go to Google, Google's given you a Gemini like AI answer.
Yep.
And that's happening more and more in like Chad and Claude. So what do churches need to do, or what do we need to know that we don't know about how to optimize our web pages?
Yeah, for sure. So first let's just kind of define the terminology that I'm going to be using. I'm going to be calling it GEO for generative engine optimization. The world hasn't really decided on a term in terms of what that realm of things is going to be called, but I'm picking that one, and that's what I mean when I'm saying that. So, and when we say GEO, what we mean is having the content that you're putting out there being easily findable by a specific type of robots, and in this case, those are the sort of agentic searches that are being performed by a tool like ChatGPT or Claude or Google, Gemini, the top of a search result, all those things that are going off and doing some AI magic behind the scenes and returning potentially some information that are sourced from searches. We're talking about the optimization for those type of searches. So you're familiar with SEO to some degree, which is optimizing for Google searches or Bing searches. GEO really isn't fundamentally that different because they're both robots and they're both trying to kind of do the same thing, which is say, what does the user want me to find? And let's go find it, right? It's trying to solve the question or give the content that's best based on what the user is asking for. So when you look at it through that lens, they're very, very similar. But there are some nuances in terms of how searches are performed with just a simple search engine like Google, where you type in a keyword, you get results. And these agentic systems that are going off and potentially performing 10 different searches and reading the web content, ingesting it, and making decisions based on what it reads. So we'll get into kind of some more detail about that. But the biggest thing that I want to sort of outline is that user intent becomes a lot more important when you get into GEO relative to SEO. And what I find really interesting, and I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, but if you ripped a human being from like the mid-1900s, and you explained what the internet was, and you said, okay, so one of these is a robot and one of these is a human, and this is how the robot is searching and this is how the human is searching, and you asked them to pick which was which, I'm like 100% confident they'd get it wrong. And that the agents, these AI agents that are performing searches, they kind of do more of what you would expect a human to do almost than humans actually do, because we've grown so accustomed to Google. When we want a search result, we take like the shortest possible path to get there, like church near me, right? If I want a church near me, 3 keywords, simple keyword matching, has a local component, really straightforward. I'm not going to say like church within 1 mile of my neighborhood, whatever my neighborhood's name is, in this city that has this blah, 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 like a super long tail keyword with lots of exposition. Yeah. But these AI agents are going to be way more verbose in what they're searching for and way more specific, because they're going to try to really understand the intent of the user and then craft a search query that is as sort of thorough as possible to match that intent.
Can I ask a little follow-up question? That, so for instance, I don't know why I just discovered this the other day, because we've noticed in a Google search that we get sort of the Gemini snippet at the top of a regular search result. But I've just noticed recently that in the search results across the top, you know, you've always had like all search results and then images and news. There's now one that says like AI. And so if you click on that, it gives you a completely different set of search results. And so what I think I'm hearing you say is that we write in a prompt, or we might talk a prompt into our phone, into the AI LLM, the large language model, or into Google. And the machine is actually building more search query or more questions behind what I'm actually asking. Is that what I'm reading here?
Yeah. So, just to give you an example, if I went off to certain agentic search tools that are available, I mean Perplexity is an example, but there's tons out there, and you know ChatGPT has deep research, blah 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 blah. There's lots of these solutions out there. And I asked it, like, find the best church for me. I live here. You know, what church should I go to this weekend? What it's probably going to do in a lot of these is go off, and it's going to start by going to either Google or Bing and performing a search like best churches in area. And then it's going to look at some of those and at the top local results and evaluate them. And it's probably going to find a list on Yelp that's going to be the 10 best churches in here. And it's going to read that webpage and say, okay, which of these match with the top search results? And what else do I know about the user who's asking this? What do they like? What do they not like? All that sort of stuff. And try to craft that user intent into basically what a research assistant would do if you had a research assistant who was, you know, just there to answer any question you had.
Okay. Mm. So it's not just taking the bait, like we're accustomed to Google, just kind of like...
Right. It's not just a keyword match. It's not just like, okay, this page ranks well from this keyword. It uses that, right? So ranking well for a keyword that's relevant, and particularly these longer tail keywords, which I'll get into later, is still important, because those are the first results that the agent who's doing the work is going to see. But they're going to see a lot more. They're going to ingest a lot more. Like I know for me, if I'm searching for a church, I'm never going to click like the Yelp link, right? I'm going to look at Google Maps. I'm going to pay attention to the local results. And some people might click the Yelp link, but the agent that's doing the deep research, they love things like lists, because it's like, oh, here's a, you know, a third party authoritative resource that has done some of this work for me. Let's see what they have to say. So it's almost like these agents don't have the time and brain power limitations that we do. So they can ingest and process information a whole lot faster. So they don't have to pick and choose as to what they're paying attention to as much, and can just take a larger sample size of things and then craft that all into, okay, what best matches my user's intent.
You know, we're always teaching that content is king in this space, right? You, if you don't have content, you'll never be found, kind of a thing. And churches are constantly creating content every week. There's somebody who gets up on a stage and preaches, and they probably say 3,000 words or so. Great content. What with the idea of trying to learn how AI will work, is there a new strategy that churches need to take when it comes to the content?
In terms of content, probably not at a fundamental level. You know, content's good, but a lot of the types of research that AI is going to be doing is going to be relative to solving a problem. So having the content and having it be well optimized, that just kind of goes back to fundamental SEO. So like if you have a sermon about troubles in marriage and somebody is searching for a solution to that problem, particularly in that area, maybe with even some more finer details that match the sermon's content, you know, having a transcription of that sermon on the site that the AI can ingest is obviously great, right? Because it provides that more additional context. But getting back to your initial question about like how do you optimize a website in general, one of the big things you can do that you kind of didn't really have to before is go deeper in structured data, which is something that probably a lot of people listening to this aren't going to have heard before. Structured data is just code on your website that spells out essentially whatever you want in a hidden way that is very, very clear to robots. It's like, so the robot doesn't really have to look for these things on your website. Like an easy example that that everybody should be doing at this point, and a lot of church websites probably are, even if they don't know it, just based on their platform, would be like having your NAP, your name, address, phone number information in structured data. So a robot can just say, okay, this is what it is. It's clear. I don't have to go looking in the footer and try to figure out what it is. They've told me what it is. I know what it is. You know, it's done. So that's a big deal for local SEO. We've talked about it. It's something that's part of our local SEO service. It's kind of a fundamental thing. But before, you could kind of stop there because Google would look at schema for things like local search results, which was great. But in terms of like your church's ministry services, like things you offer, if you had schema about that, nobody was really looking for it. Like they weren't looking deeper at that context. But now AI agents will be, and it'll be clear to them. So with what your church is doing, if you can make that as clear as possible through schema to AI and whatever robot is crawling your church website, that's going to make it confident to say, okay, when someone's asking, where should I get married? I'm planning a wedding, 9 months from now. Where should my venue be? All of a sudden, now the AI can be like, okay, this is clear. This is a service and structured data. I know this church offers weddings under, you know, these circumstances. Maybe I'll recommend that as a potential option. Or, you know, depending on what a church is doing, there's so many different things that you could include in there that then could become relevant in solving a problem through a generative search somewhere.
Is that schema code, is it always local oriented? Or if I know like Claude will now write code for me. So I can write a blog post. I can use Claude to, you know, write a blog post from a sermon or edit a blog post that I've written. I can then have Claude actually write the schema to go on that page for that blog post. And what you're saying is I might have great content and it might be well optimized on the page, but the robots or the agents that are doing these deep level searches are actually looking at the schema code on the website, which is not visible to the human who's browsing the website, more so than maybe the content that's on the pages. Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah, they're looking at both, but it's more an issue of it might not be crystal clear certain important things the church does or offers just from browsing their website. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you can put that in a schema sense, it's almost like there's certain things you just wouldn't want to have on the website because it would be dry and straightforward and like, we offer this thing at this, at this place, at this time, and like big bold text, like nobody does that. It's not a good user experience for people, but for a robot, that's an ideal user experience because then it's like, oh, this is what they do and this is all the information I need to know about it. So you can hide that behind the scenes, just make it easier for, you know, any sort of robot to be confident that that is the correct answer to the question that it's essentially asking of the website.
Okay, can I double click on that for a second? So one of the challenges that we see regularly on websites is churches not using their H1 and their H2 headings properly, primarily because they see H1 and H2 as font size, not necessarily as SEO valuable content.
Sure.
Can we offset our deficiencies with our H1 and H2 with what we have in the schema? Does that help?
Yeah, you absolutely could. I mean, that would provide sort of replacement context. you still end up then doing some things. So the purpose of H1, H2 also is huge for people with disabilities in terms of if you're using a screen reader, that really provides context, into like how you're supposed to read the document and how a screen reader is going to behave if you want to like, say, go to the next section. So for people who have disabilities, Schema is not going to save them in that respect. So H1s, H2s have a lot of important, HTML structure in general, using descriptive HTML is really important for a lot of good reasons. But yeah, to get back to your original question, Schema could cover that deficiency from an SEO or a GEO standpoint. Absolutely.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, this is so fascinating. I'm sure everybody listening is going, they got a question they wish they could ask right now. So I mean, what kind of strategy should we do moving forward?
Yeah. So one thing that is kind of interesting that has come out of this is Bing, Microsoft's search engine, is essentially gaining market share because Microsoft owns a lot of the sort of generative engines that are performing searches and then says, well, I'm obviously going to use my own search engine because I own it. So I'm going to promote my own thing. So in some ways, this has been a way for Microsoft to gain ground or regain some ground on Google, which was obviously dominating the human-based search marketplace. So in terms of strategy shifts, to an extent, making sure your presence on Bing is well optimized, including Bing Places, which is like the equivalent of your Google Business Profile. That's kind of a change that we're seeing. So Microsoft has kind of been able to game the system a little bit to gain ground there. It seems a little bit unfair, but that's the reality of big tech.
Yeah. Is anybody really going to be mad if somebody's doing something unfair to Google? Like, really?
Well, Microsoft was the big boy before Google. So sure. I'm a Microsoft fanboy, so I like when good things happen to Microsoft. But in the objective sense, to me, Microsoft is more the big bad, you know, kind of tyrant than Google. Although that might not be the case these days. But anyway, they're both big evil corporations who look out for themselves. But yeah, bottom line, Microsoft is now more relevant in optimization than it has been in, you know, the last 10 or 15 years. So there's some shifts that need to happen there. But I think maybe the biggest takeaway that I'd like to get across to people is that GEO and SEO aren't so fundamentally different. It's not like you're doing two completely separate activities. There are nuances and there are things that are more specific to one than the other. But if your overall fundamental SEO is very strong, at minimum, your GEO is going to be decent.
Okay.
So so it's not something we have to be like, okay, we have awesome SEO, but our GEO is starting at zero. It's not. Just the findability of your content, if your SEO is really strong, is going to be reasonably good in generative engines. And there's things you can do to help improve that further. But it's not like you're starting from scratch and it's not like the two things exist in a vacuum.
Mm. Okay. Go ahead, Jason.
Well,
I'll cross my fingers and I'll remember my question in a minute.
Jay, you read a lot. You're extremely knowledgeable. Jason Collier is our go-to guy whenever we have any kind of a technical problem. He has an answer for us. Where do you think this is all headed in terms of, is it going to stay consistent with like the way we do GEO versus SEO? Or do you see AI just advancing so far it's just going to be a different thing a year from now? Or do you have that?
So I've kind of said this before, I think maybe on an episode, which is in like the very, very long term, in like the ideal world scenario, the EOs, the SEOs, the GEOs, they don't really exist. And the reason is, the only reason they exist is because the robots that are doing all this work aren't perfect and need help. So as they get stronger, you actually have to do less. So over time, things are going to get better and there is going to be less to do, but that's going to take a long time. So are things going to fundamentally change over the next year or two? Probably in some nuances and specific situations, but largely speaking, it's going to be the same kind of foundation you're building on, which is the same foundation for SEO that's been in place for a long time. And there are going to continue to be nuances, particularly with respect, I think, to like trying to figure out authenticity of content, which is going to become a real problem. And that's probably more in terms of media, but like, just, is this real? Is it fake? Is it actually, is the source of this reputable? All that sort of stuff is going to come really heavily into question. And that's probably outside like a church website scope. It would be more like the social media and things of that nature. But yeah, there's going to be some big problems that need to be solved. But I think the answer to your question is, it's going to, the foundation of SEO and GEO is going to stay the same, and there will be nuances here and there, but ultimately you're trying to help robots find the right stuff they're looking for.
Let me speak to what I think is really going to change, even if the technical aspects of things don't. What's changing is the way that people are interacting and engaging with the technology.
Yes.
So going back to the point that you were talking about at the very beginning, which was like, As we work on local SEO with churches, we focus on the keyword phrase, church near me or churches near me. You use the example of somebody asking the question, which church should I go to this weekend? Which is a fundamentally different question. But I think that what we're going to see is people, rather than Googling things like marriage help near me or parenting help near me, they're going to start asking more questions about how to solve the problem, and they're going to be dependent on the information provided by the LLMs or the agents that they're using and the results that they get. And so I think as content creators, we have the ability, whether it's gospel-centric content or just simply helpful felt needs content, to be providing good, authoritative, reputable content to help people, whether it's localized or not localized. Some of the things that I've read recently, Jason, talk about how the way we write our content has to shift in some ways so that it is more, I guess, more concisely helpful. I guess that's the best way for me to explain it. Rather, you know, we write a 1500 word blog post or a 3500 word blog post that gets to the long way about solving the problem or answering the question. And perhaps maybe some of the ways that we write content need to have shorter, simpler ways to answer the question or solve the problem. And then also the way that we're using long tail keywords, which is a phrase you used a few minutes ago, and I'd like for you to expound on that. So
yeah, I do want to get back to that.
Yeah, can you comment on the things that I'm thinking about here, or I'm talking about in terms of the way that content is written and the way that people are engaging with the agents, and then talk about long tail keywords a little bit and how that might play into it.
Right, and those two things are tied deeply together, because the way people would engage with an LLM agent now to perform a search, they'd ask what the problem was, and then the agent would go and perform various number of searches instead of the user. They're like a middleman between the user and the search engine, like a research assistant. And so what the agent's going to do is often use longer tail keywords than a human would, for whatever reason, because I guess agents think that we talk too much, or that's just how humans behave. But it's going to be more verbose than a human typically would. And when we say long tail keywords, we just mean longer keywords. Like instead of church near me, a long tail keyword, and that would be like church in Calgary, Alberta, Canada that has more than 500, blah, 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 a whole bunch of other descriptive words in there, right? So when you're optimizing for longer tail keywords, they're much more specific, but they also are, way more precise in terms of targeting a problem. So because these agents are going to be performing more searches and more long tail keywords, a higher volume of searches for a higher variety and longer tail keywords, having content for those types of keywords just becomes more important. And that's kind of the GEO versus SEO difference. Before, that wasn't as important because people weren't taking the time to write out the 10-word keyword. Now the LLMs are going to be. So having a pretty close match to that keyword in a blog or in some sort of content is going to put you ahead. So that's kind of the advantage you can gain in content preparation is you can go deeper and you can hit on those long tails. But at the same time, as you were saying, the conciseness, if you want to be returned in like a Google snippet at the top, you kind of do want to have that concise solution to the problem, right? That Google can kind of spit out and reference in like 2, 3, 4 sentences max. So there's a battle there and that you want to match as many long tail keywords as possible, but you also want to solve the problem in a concise way that is sort of quotable, I guess would be the best way to say it, by an AI agent.
So would that, I have no idea if this is the way this works, but so for instance, I write a 1500 word blog post. I've used long tail keywords periodically through my article that asks a question at the beginning of each section that that section answers. But perhaps I can then write a short summary that's like maybe 3 to 5 sentences that sort of synthesizes the solution to the overarching problem. That can be somewhere obviously in my blog post or in my article. Should that also be in my schema?
Yeah, and so there is also some schema with respect to some commonly sort of used pieces of content on church websites, like things like an FAQ. So you can wrap structured data around an FAQ that then can make those answers to questions easily snipped by things like LLMs to be, okay, this is the definitive answer to this question because the question was literally placed on the website and the answer's right here, right? It makes it very, very clear. So if you have some of those other structures in place, you can kind of, grease the gears a little bit in terms of providing authoritative answers to very specific questions. But yeah, to get back to your original question, schema and blogs can outline exactly what kind of keywords you're targeting and just really provide additional context into what the intent of the blog is. Like, what problems are you trying to solve?
I'm going to, Jason, one more follow-up on that, and then I'll hand things over to you. I think one of the things that is a recurring challenge for me when I'm coaching churches on their SEO is churches tend to think of their website as one large container of content rather than unique individual pages that all need to be optimized. Can you speak a little bit to the difference between optimizing like a website versus optimizing a page on a website? Is there a differentiation? Like how much, if I've got, 20 different ministries in my church, do I need to optimize every single page uniquely? Is that my goal? Is that my objective? Is that what's most helpful? Can you speak to that just a little bit?
Yeah. So the answer is you don't have to optimize every page, but you do have to optimize every page that has enough quality or relevant content that you deem it being worthy of ranking in Google in some way, essentially. So the bit of an X factor there is if you optimize a whole bunch of content on one website, about a whole bunch of different topics, that can be kind of confusing. So you want your message in terms of like, you want a robot or an AI agent or whoever is kind of evaluating the content for it to be intuitive that, okay, this is a church. They have these services that it makes sense that a church would have. But if there is content on your website that's kind of like superfluous to what your church is and what it offers, then you might not want to optimize that. You might even want to no-index it because it might just be kind of confusing. But so content that is sort of consistent with your church's identity and the things that you do should be optimized because you want it to be found in Google. But if there's a whole bunch of pages on your website that have very, very little content, like a lot of, excuse my dog there.
He's got a dog and a 4-year-old, and there's all kinds of stuff going on at the Collier house right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I might have to pick him up so he doesn't keep barking here. Hang on.
I'm sure we have some dog fans watching listening to the podcast.
We'll have a guest. Okay.
Oh, look at that.
A guest visit from Roger here.
What's his name?
His name's Roger.
Roger.
He's one. But anyway, what I was going to get at is you might have a lot of pages on your church website that really just don't have a lot of content. Like unless you're being extremely purposeful in optimizing the pages for your sermon every week. If you're just using a plugin or, embedding you know, a short code from a third party service that is what a lot of churches do. There's going to be very little SEO value there, or some things like events may or may not be optimized well. So there could be a lot of pages on your website that really just aren't going to benefit from optimization. There's not going to be a long-term benefit there. But for things like ministries, if they're core to what your church is and what you're offering, then yeah, you should be optimizing around that so people can find it. And making it clear for LLMs and agents exactly what that ministry does. Like, what do you really offer? Spell it out in things like schema so that it's clear, you know, what it is you're providing, so that when somebody asks for it, the agent can say, okay, here's where you can go for help.
Mm. This is so fascinating. We probably need to land this, but I have one question. I think it's probably going to allow us to have another upcoming podcast. Mm-hmm. That is this idea of these things I've been hearing called AI agents. And I don't think many people know what that is or what that could do. So would you briefly explain what an AI agent, because I hear that that's everyone's going to have an agent. You know,
sure. So that's extremely
broad.
He's
used the word, Jason has used,
I've used the word agentic a lot.
He's used the word
exactly.
Agentic, uh-huh. Which means agent-ish, agent-like, right. I don't know, agentic. For those of you who are trying to pick up what he was dropping, agentic sure. Is related to agents.
Right. So that's extremely broad. But what people mean when they say an AI agent is an AI system that can take action, really, that has sort of agency itself. Like it can actually do something in terms of, like, rather than if you're just talking to ChatGPT, you can't tell it to go off and do something unless you're using deep research, right? It's gonna use the information it's trained on. It's not gonna be able to go and, you know, sync into your Google Calendar and blah, 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 unless you have the necessary integrations. Like the base ChatGPT just doesn't work that way. It's an LLM, that's what it is. So an AI agent is just a system that can take action, and that may be all sorts of different actions. So in the context of what we were talking about in this podcast, it was doing things like performing a Google search and then reading the search results and going to those web pages and evaluating their content and parsing the HTML and the schema and then making decisions to provide an answer to the user. But it might be something like making a phone call as a voice agent on behalf of your church, or picking up a phone call, or sending a text message, or categorizing your email, or doing all sorts of different things that could be helpful to you that an AI system is capable of doing. So really all AI agent means is an AI system that can take action. And there's a lot of actions right now that AI is very much capable of doing at a relatively high level. And it's just continuing to get better, which is cool from an efficiency standpoint and scary from a, what world do we live in? What's real? What's not? And, you know, what do I have to be careful about on the internet now sort of situation as well.
Yeah, I'd really love to have us have a podcast on that, because I think there's could be some really practical things that a church could build an agent to help them do specific tasks every week or daily. And what does that look like? And how is it going to help the church be more efficient, move the ball forward and reaching more people and all that stuff that we are trying to teach churches around? So I think we're going to have to schedule some more time with you, Jason.
Yeah, if only someone was working on stuff like that, right? That would be
dun, dun, dun,
that would be cool.
There might be. It's interesting. So let me, I see these ads periodically that come up in my social feeds and the like. And the ads are for a service, an AI service that can help me organize my emails, automatically respond to certain emails based on certain situations and circumstances, or prioritize emails for me. I'm assuming that is an agent type of application that I would be paying for if I decided to use that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the line between like what is AI and what isn't AI is so hard to draw. I gave a talk, I think it's about 2 years ago now. We put together sort of an AI, I think we called it a summit. Mm-hmm. What was the name of the summit, Mr. Hamrock? You remember what I'm talking about?
The AI for churches? No,
It was even predated that, I think, slightly. But it was like the AI Innovation Summit or something we called it. Anyway, innovation. we had Yeah, we had a lot of content there. And the one thing that in doing research for that, and just as AI has become more prominent, that I found really interesting is nobody can really decide like where the line is. Is this AI? Is it not AI? And the people who are building the tools just don't care what you call it. It's just, we're building something cool. So who cares if it's AI or not? But to answer your question, Bart, yeah, I would consider that to be an AI agent.
Okay, very interesting.
And you're going to see a lot of them coming out here, and you're going to be talking to them in the next few years. The amount of time you spend talking to AI agents versus people, that scale is going to tip dramatically. You've probably already talked to some AI agents on the phone, received calls from them, but it's going to be a lot more prominent. When you call places, when you call businesses, you're going to be getting an AI agent a lot more often than you're probably expecting in the next year or two.
Very interesting stuff. Mr. Hamrock, you have any parting shots today before we wrap this thing up?
Don't be overwhelmed, because we're all learning this at the same rate and speed. And if you feel like you're really, really far behind, you're in good company. And the good news is it's probably going to change. And so keep dialing in, keep listening to the podcast, because we'll bring Jason on, because he's a source of knowledge for us, at least as much as he knows. That we can share with you guys, because we're all in it to try and help churches get better and more efficient.
Yeah, before we wrap up, Jason did mention our Sermon Spark tool. Jason, why don't you just give a quick little pitch for what Sermon Spark is? Do you know how many pastors or church leaders are using Sermon Spark these days? And yeah, why don't you just give us a little elevator pitch for Sermon Spark, Mr. Collier?
Sure. Sermon Spark is a sermon preparation AI-powered assistant for pastors. Helps you with research in terms of just fleshing out ideas, referencing for biblical truth, and also in the writing process, it can provide outlines, suggest some titles, but it's not going to write your sermon for you. So it's not a sermon writer powered by AI. It's a sermon research assistant powered by AI, but it also does some other things in terms of it can transcribe your sermon on YouTube, give you the transcript, and then help you generate some blog posts or social media posts, things of that nature around that. So we actually have a bunch of communications people at churches who use Sermon Spark as opposed to the pastor there, because they just kind of want to do the post-sermon stuff. So lots of good tools. And we've had, I think, 6,500 different either pastors or communication people give it a try up to this point. And people seem to enjoy their time with it. And you can sign up for free and you can transcribe for free. There is a paid level of service, but you can get a lot of mileage out of it for free, as our users have been doing every week.
I believe the URL for that is sermonspark.ai. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Sermonspark.ai. I will, just as a user, I use it every week after our team has preached a sermon. We use it to pull the transcript, to pull some social media content, and to use it to create a blog post every single week, and find it to be super, super helpful. So for those of you who haven't yet tried it, it's probably worth trying. For those of you who haven't yet subscribed to the Missional Marketing Podcast, we want to remind you to do that. If you're watching on the YouTube channel, make sure you subscribe there. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever your favorite podcast platform is, make sure that you subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And if you think that this episode would be helpful for somebody in ministry, somebody that you know who is curious about how AI and GEO is impacting the SEO landscape. SEO is not dead. I guess that's the message that we want to communicate. SEO is still relevant. All the things that we've been coaching you up to this point are still relevant. In fact, probably a lot of the things that we've been coaching you on, you probably need to double down on to some degree. The rules still maintain the same impact. It's kind of like being healthy as a human. Maybe there's new foods and new exercises out, but you still need to keep to the fundamentals and do the basic things to be a healthy person and to have a healthy website. We want to make sure that we're following all the basic SEO rules. And we'd love to have more conversation with you about that. If you'd like to set up a call with Jason or me, we can do an audit of your website and we can help you look at the SEO on your website and see how we might be able to improve it, whether that's giving you some coaching and guidance or whether Missional Marketing might be able to help you out with that on the back end. So on behalf of Mr. Hamrock, Mr. Collier, and Roger Collier. That's his name, right? Roger Collier.
Yeah, that's Roger.
Roger the Pug.
Here he is.
I'm Bart Blair. Thanks so much for joining us on another episode of the Missional Marketing Podcast. This podcast is a production of Missional Marketing. Our goal is to help churches grow by leveraging digital marketing and effective communications. For more information, visit our website at missionalmarketing.com.